Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On the telephone today, we have David Morissette. David is the founder and president of Chateau Morissette up in Floyd, Virginia. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, we always like to talk to winery owners and vineyard owners and find out where they came from and how they did things. So give us a little bit of information about your background and how you got started in the wine business.
The winery was actually started by my mother and father in the 70s, one of the oldest, if not the oldest winery in the state. We started making wine in a cave they blasted underground and at our family farm, and I became interested in it, went to winemaking school in 1981.
Tell us about the process you went through on making a selection of your particular vineyard location.
Probably picked the worst place in the state of Virginia to try to grow grapes at the beginning. While I was in school, my mother and father had some consultants, and they told me some grapes to plant, and a lot of them weren't acceptable to the climate here. We're at 3,500 feet elevation and regularly get minus 5 below, even though we're only like 70 miles from Greensboro, Madison area. So we replanted the grapes with some French hybrids in the early 80s with Sauvignon Blanc, Vidal Blanc, Chamberson. And in 87, it was 35 below zero. Wind chill was 100 below zero, and obviously it wiped out everything.
Good grief.
Killed everything. My mother and father planted a grape called Niagara, which I'd never studied in school before. And I fermented it to dryness, and it was terrible, but I put sugar in it. We sold out in a month. So for a 21-year-old, it was a pretty valuable lesson that don't make what you like, make what the customers want. And that's how we got involved in starting to make sweet wines. And then we planted the vineyard in that Niagara because it's Native American, so it can withstand a lot of the cold and the harsh temperatures we have.
So is your whole vineyard now Niagara?
The one that we have at the winery is, yes. We actually have lease controls over another 200 and some plus acres throughout the state, from about seven different growers. Maybe it's about a little over 200 acres where we have Chardonnay, Cab, Merlot, Chamberson, Petit Verdot, and things like that. But for the one right at the estate winery, yeah, just because of the location where we are, it's the only thing that'll live.
So you said you're at 3,500?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, we're at 3,500 feet elevation.
Yeah, you've got to have some really cold-hearted grapes growing in that kind of
condition. Yeah.
we ran into some similar problems down here. Everybody loves muscadines and have been told they don't grow here in the mountains. But our particular vineyard has been lucky. I spent 3 years of my life trying to figure out how to propagate these native ones we found growing in the mountains here. And that's what our vineyard is now. It's all native, cold-hearted Catua muscadines. But if you don't have those, they will not grow here. We're at 2,100 feet, and they will not grow here. So paying attention to being cold hardy is number one, putting a vineyard here in the mountains.
People that are looking at vineyards, you need to go out there in the wintertime and also see where the cold spots are, too.
Yep.
And make sure you don't plant there either.
David, talk to me just a little bit about the kinds of trellising that you have in your vineyard for Niagara.
We used to have Geneva double curtain
okay. On
all of it. And we recently went to just single double wires because we actually machine harvested now.
Oh.
We found we can use a machine harvesting and pick a day and a half, which normally would take about 2 weeks by hand.
That's a huge labor savings.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you get the fruit. You know, before, if it was 2 weeks, you had to pick some's a little green, some's a little overripe, with the majority in the middle being picked. And with this, you just pick it optimum ripeness.
Are you also the winemaker there, David?
I used to be. I'm not anymore now.
Okay, who's your winemaker now?
The winemaker is named Brian Smythe. He's a gentleman who's trained in New Zealand and Australia and in California.
Fantastic. New Zealand grows some great cold-hardy grapes down there, so it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fairly helps to help them out with some of the issues we have here.
If you were to
go back and take a look at what you did from the very get-go and say, here's what we did right, or by luck, what would that be?
What we did right from the beginning? Wasn't a lot. most of what we did was wrong. That's a lot of how we learned how to do things by what we did wrong. I think the number one thing we did right was the original winery was at our home, which is it's a family retreat we've had for a long time, since I was a little kid. And the driveway is 2 miles long once you get in our gates, and we realized we don't want anybody to find us. And so we actually moved the winery to the current location, which is right next to the entrance to the parkway, which has 16 million visitors on the parkway. And so the number three things for a winery location is location, location, location. Picking the site where the great winery is seems to have been probably the smartest thing we did.
I don't recall anybody having 16 million cars as traffic past their winery. That's astounding.
Well, that's the whole length of the parkway. That's their numbers of, all the entrances back. But we obviously don't get all those right in front of here. But, we get pretty steady traffic from right next to the winery. And so they can see our sign from the parkway. And majority of our business, though, is from Charlotte, Raleigh, and the Triad region. Up North Carolina, in Roanoke, from Blacksburg, Virginia.
Well, I know Blacksburg well. I'm an old Hokie.
Are you? Oh, okay.
Class of 62. Tell me just a bit about what you would recommend to people that you would have done differently. What would you do next time around if you had to do it over?
I would have planted grapes first and get them to maturity and to where we know they're at optimum, quality levels, and sell some of the fruit just kind of help finance the winery, because the saying that you take a large fortune to make a small fortune in the wine business is definitely true. It can be an incredibly expensive venture to get started in. So many people don't really realize how expensive it is until they get into it.
Well, here in the mountains, just for price comparison, we can get an acre of grapes installed here for somewhere between $5,000 and $9,000. What is it up in the Virginia area?
I've heard it's $15,000 in Virginia. That seems to be the average for Virginia.
The old adage is true of how to make $1 million to start out with two.
Yes, it is. Or three.
Or three. And sometimes folks here don't have the appreciation, because we're a tobacco country down here, as part of Virginia was, if I recall. And, most of the farmers here are trained to put a crop in the spring and harvest something in the fall and get the cash flow. But here, you put your grapes in the ground, you wait for 6 or 7 years.
Right. That just takes a long time, doesn't it? A lot of your money just sitting there.
Yep. And you got to maintain it and keep working on it while you're waiting. When you start looking at a winery, how would you compare the capital investment of a winery compared to a vineyard? 10 times? 100 times? What?
Probably 100 times. When we built this building in 99, the building without the equipment cost a little over $4 million. But we built it to make it look and last forever, and this salvage timber frame building is the largest salvage timber frame building in the country.
Wow.
So it's all, and we took all the timbers and everything throughout the whole production area, too, not just in the tasting room. So the whole building's a massive timber frame structure.
Jeez. I haven't had the pleasure of being there yet, but I plan to do that maybe this summer.
With that, we didn't cut any trees for the whole building, which we thought was pretty awesome.
When somebody comes up to you and say, Mr. Morissette, what wine should I try at your winery? What do you tell them?
First thing we ask them is, what kind of wine do they like? We've learned over the years to make a different wine for every type of person that comes through the door so that you don't lose a sale.
Yep.
So we make Cab, Merlot, and then we make fruit wines. We started making fruit wines about 5 or 6 years ago, and they've done incredibly well. Some of them made from apples right down the street, which is really, really great to be able to help my neighbors out with the apples. But the fruit wines are really interesting. They're not syrupy sweet. They're sweet, but they're very well balanced. And so those are interesting to taste, because a lot of people hadn't tasted fruit wines. If they have, they've tasted them and thought they tasted like cough syrup, I guess. And these don't. So it it's a nice surprise to a lot of people when they taste them.
Well, here in North Carolina, we have a lot of wineries who also work with fruit wines, and there's quite a following of people who just primarily drink fruit wines. I mean, they prefer that to a full-blown 100% grape wine.
It's not a fad. I think people, it's just a niche people found that they really, really like, and it's kind of hard to explain. You know, I mean, most people, a lot of people say they only drink dry, but they drink sweet.
Yeah.
It's definitely a sweet nation, for sure, without a doubt. If you go in the grocery store, you can, or any kind of store, you can look at that and tell that people like sweet wines.
It is the South, after all. I mean, I've traveled around the world, I'm sure as you have, and this is the only place that I can ever recall. You go into a restaurant and they ask you for tea, sweet or unsweet.
Yeah, right. Well, that is real nice tea, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, you can go to parts of Florida that don't even offer you sweet tea.
Yeah, it's sort of unique.
Yeah, so they definitely have a sweet palate for it. And but the big companies like Gallo and Sutter Home have actually started making sweet wines because they've seen the sales in the South, and they want the sales to go to them, not to other wineries.
Well, folks, we've been talking on the phone today with David Morissette, who is the founder and president of Chateau Morissette up in Floyd, Virginia. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Fatty Fresnel's Fantastic Fishing Lures and Fish Knocker. Most folks around Hot Springs have either met or heard about Fatty Fresnel. He's a local fishing hero in the mountains of western Madison County. He invented a secret recipe that he coats on his lures that fish cannot resist. Fatty has won every fishing contest in North Carolina in the past decade or so. Fatty recently underwent serious surgery for his shoulders after getting caught under a tree limb that fell on him while he was fishing on the banks of the French Broad River near his home in Hot Springs. The doctors told him he should give up fishing and his job working at the local UPS store because he can no longer lift boxes with his shoulders being seriously impaired from the accident. If you know Fatty, you know that giving up fishing did not go down well. Fatty decided to go commercial with his special homemade fishing lures to make up for lost income since he can't lift heavy boxes anymore. I recently caught up with Fatty on his back porch where he was whipping up a batch of his secret recipe to coat his fishing lures. He told me I had to promise not to tell anyone what I saw when I came to visit him while he was mixing his special concoction for his lures. Although I can't tell you all of the ingredients, I did see devil's fingers mushrooms, possum innards, and bear grease. Fatty proudly showed me his handmade lures. He has several sizes to accommodate any kind of fish you may go after. Tiny ones for trout, medium ones for bass, and larger multi-hook ones for larger lunkers like muskies. The key, of course, is the special coating of his secret recipe that makes them all work. Fatty carefully coats the lures with a vine boar hog brush dipped in his secret recipe. He dries them on a line strung between two back porch roof supports. Once dried, he carefully hand packs them in small elderberry wooden boxes suitable for the size. Fatty also showed me one of his fishing accessories that he sells with his lures. He calls it a fish knocker. He says it's a must-have accessory if you use his fishing lures. It looks like a baseball bat that's been cut in half. I asked Fatty to explain how his fish knocker is used. He said there's two different situations where it's used. One is when you are fishing in a boat. He claims that the fishing lures are so powerful in attracting fish, you have to use the fish knocker to keep the fish from jumping into the boat while you're trying to tie his special lures on your fishing line. The second case is when you're fishing from shore. The same thing happens. The fish are trying to get at the lure and will jump out of the water to try to get at his lures. Fatty suggests that hiding behind a tree while you're tying the lures to your fishing line usually works, so you don't need a fish knocker. Make sure the tree you hide behind is a live, strong tree. Last year, his neighbor, Cletus Cantrell, made the mistake of ducking behind an old outhouse near the edge of the lake while he was tying on his lure. A 40-pound carp came up out of the water and slammed into the side of the outhouse with such force that it turned over the outhouse and fell on Cletus. Broke his shoulder and gave him a concussion.
Fatty had to add a disclaimer to his packaging about taking better care when using his lures. Fatty has packaged one each size of his lures with a fish knocker. You can now buy Fatty Fresnel's fantastic fishing lures and a fish knocker for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. Fatty Fresnel's fantastic fishing lures and fish knocker is another product made in the USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking on the phone today with David Morissette. David is the president and founder of Chateau Morissette up in Floyd, Virginia. David, just before the break, we were talking about some of the wines that you make there and talking about fruit wines. Tell me specifically, what kind of fruit wines do you make?
Well, we make apple, cherry, and blackberry. And we make sangria, which is kind of just a mixture of all three of those. The apple wine is from apples right down the street, about 7 miles from here. The cherry is partly from here and some from Michigan, obviously. There's not a huge amount of cherry juice available in this area. And blackberry. And they're all really, really very well-made wines. I never thought we'd make sweet fruit wines. The wine-making team actually made blackberry wine behind my back. And they're lucky it was good. And that's what started it. And then we just ventured into some of the others as we saw the demand for it.
Just before the break, I forgot to ask you a question about the size of your winery, the capacity, number of bottles, and so forth. Where are you in that scale of things?
Well, we produce about 70,000 cases a year.
Wow.
And hope to start gradually increase that about 10,000 every other year. I hope to get to about 120,000 cases and kind of hold it there. We don't want to so big that we can't keep under control what we're doing, and also and be able to enjoy life too, not just work the whole time.
There is a touch of work to this business.
Oh, it does, without a doubt. It's something you have to learn how to know and how to do absolutely everything. And you're doing this. I still clean bathrooms if necessary.
So I was joking earlier about the man that wears 10 different hats. You're a true case of that. Good for you.
Yes, I wouldn't ask anybody here to do something I hadn't done over before either. So I think that's the right management style.
Yeah, I share that work ethic with you. Well, let's talk about the specific wines you have there. Somebody wanted to buy some of your wines, and where would they go to get them?
Well, the winery, so we're open 7 days a week, and the restaurant, we have a restaurant here on site, which local ingredients either from our farm or nearby farms, and that's open Wednesday through Sunday. It's an amazing restaurant. So you can buy them at the winery or the restaurant. They're available in the grocery, Harris Teeter, Kroger, Food Lion, Fresh Market, Walmart, pretty much all the major outlets. And the wines are Ingles, Food City, so it's available in a lot. Almost all the major chains throughout the area.
Super. So somebody wanted to find you and come visit your winery, what kind of directions could you give them?
We can go to our website, thedogs.com, and it has directions from most areas within 100, 150 miles from here. We have a Facebook site, which gives information. Those are probably the two best things would be the website, because it has turn-by-turn directions from most areas. It definitely does from Madison and Greensboro and Raleigh and Charlotte.
What other activities do you have going on at your place?
Well, we're what you consider a destination winery, and we have a restaurant on site. We have music concerts. We have music every Sunday on our patio, which is free. We have big concerts three or four times a year, the Black Dog Music Concert Series. We have weddings here close to every weekend. There's at least one wedding here. When you come here, there's you can go hiking on the Blue Ridge Parkways, hiking trails, which are about a half mile from here, or we have hiking trails on our property that we're installing right now. So be able to hike down through the vineyards and just walk around throughout most of the property. just lots to do. It's a beautiful setting, so a lot of people just come to have lunch and tour the winery and just kind of just enjoy the afternoon until the weather's nice. And it's definitely a lot cooler here than it is down the mountain.
It's one of the big advantages of having a little altitude with your vineyard and your winery is it always tends to be a little cooler down in the flatland.
Absolutely. I grew up without air conditioning or a fan, which you don't really need, so come up here is just, you can just, the whole area is, you know, it's not spoiled, it's not heavily developed at all, so it's still fairly natural or native the way it was ages ago.
Well, it sounds like you've got a full service place there, David. I mean, the different things that you have going on with your weddings and your hiking sites and the restaurant and so forth, that's got to keep a whole bunch of people busy down there.
Yes, we do. It's definitely, if you won't be bored when you come here, well, there's always something for somebody to do. Dogs, where we started the whole theme of the property is the dog, so a lot of times they're here as well.
Well, I know your label's sort of famous because you've got dogs on all your labels.
Right.
Who designed the labels?
Well, I've designed a lot of them, and basically in-house, we do a majority of it or have someone else. We explain to somebody else what we want, and they put it together for us.
I assume you got somebody that takes care of the cola for the labels?
We do that all in-house.
You've touched every basis of the viticulture industry there personally, haven't you?
We've tried to. I mean, we pretty much do. You have to wear 20 different hats at least here. Each day's different. You don't know what you're going to be doing when you get to work until you get here.
Well, you one of the few specialists I know of in the winery business that specializes in Niagara. I'd like to talk to you just a touch about that. What kind of, at your location, you said 3,500 feet, what's the harvest bricks that you shoot for there?
Well, Niagara typically doesn't get into the 20s very often. We used to get it about, I'd say, 18, 19, 20. They're so fragrant that if they even stay on the vine much longer, you can smell them from so far away that the deer and the bear and the everything just comes and just helps themselves to them just nonstop. If they don't pick them, probably about 18 to 19 is about average bricks.
What's interesting that we have found here, I've got just a little test plot of various kinds of grapes behind my greenhouse, just very near my vineyard. But the Niagaras, they're absolutely aromatic. I mean, the bears can smell them here 2 miles away. And same thing with our muscadines. They're extremely aromatic that way. And boy, I mean, during the season, we got to turn on an electric fence to keep the bears out.
Yeah, we do too. But they just walk right through it.
Well, we got 12,000 volts on 5 wires. They don't walk through ours.
I guess they don't, do they?
No, they don't. But the deer still jump over. But we found here that they don't really eat the muscadines. It's sort of a peculiar thing. They nibble the ends of the, you know, the tendrils and the leaves, especially the younger tips, which is free mid-season canopy management for me, saves me from pruning them. But the bears, if they could get in there, they just shred them, just absolutely kill them.
Yeah. Well, the deer, here, I'm sure the deer like this everywhere, but they're just such huge population. There are more deer here than there were when the pilgrims lived here. There's so many of them now, and it's just amazing what the damage that they can do.
Yeah, do you have deer hunters that come in there?
We do. Once we start getting damaged, we allow it, with requirements that has to be either eaten or given to hunters for the hungry.
Yep.
Just shoot them just for the sake of shooting them.
Sure.
Yeah, we're not okay with that. And I don't allow them to shoot the bears.
Well, it can be a problem. Back on the winemaking thing, did I understand that you maybe added some sugar to the Niagara?
Yes, we do. It kind of depends on the year.
What do you shoot for on your final alcohol content for your wine?
About 7 or 8.
7 or 8%, really?
Yeah, it's fairly low alcohol. That just needs to be the balance of where people like it, and that balances out with the acidity as well. So,
do you have any other special treatment that's different for the Niagaras compared to your other vinifera?
Well, the skins on these are so thick, we actually have to crush, when we're pressing them, we have to use rice hulls to help press out the juice because the skins are so thick.
Wow, that's like muscadines.
Yeah, muscadines have to do that too.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely, for sure. Yeah, we have to use rice hulls, and sometimes they just you have to press them a lot, a heck of a lot more pressure than you normally would.
So what kind of press do you have?
We've got a 20-ton. We have a 5-ton and a 20-ton. It'll do a 52-foot tractor trailer of grapes.
Wow. And, of course, this has got to be a hydraulic press, right, not a bladder press?
It's a bladder.
It is a bladder?
Yeah, it is a bladder. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think you'd get the pressure high enough on a bladder to do the Niagaras. Huh.
This one seems to do it pretty well.
Jeez.
As much as it costs, it should.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen to that. Well, David, we certainly appreciate your taking time today to be with on the radio.
Well, thank you very much.
And so, having said that, I really appreciate your taking the time, and certainly my radio audience have a chance to learn some interesting things about you and your winery up there, and certainly we're going to get a chance to stop in there and try it out and take a walk around and see this wonderful place it sounds like you've built there.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it, and just welcome you or anyone come and visit, and show them around the place, and hope they have a great time.
Well, folks, we've been on the phone today with David Morissette, who is the founder and president of Chateau Morissette up in Floyd, Virginia. And sounds like he's got a wonderful place there, so if you get a chance, go up there and check it out and taste some of his wonderful Niagara wines. Folks, we're going to call that a wrap for today's program. Thanks for tuning in.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!